Welcome to the Global Business Women's Pod, hosted by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I am Susan Dyson and extremely excited to be your podcast host. In my day job, I am proud to be the CEO, president, and founder of the Chamber. Every Thursday at 6 p.m., we will bring you inspiring stories of women who are leading in the advancement of women and girls. We will take you with us to our premier events. You will meet entrepreneurs, executives, and philanthropists who will empower and inspire you to succeed. So please mark your calendars and join us for the Empowering Global Business Women's Pod, Thursday at 6 p.m. When I first asked Dr. Lewis to be the interviewer for the author of a book named Smile, he immediately said yes. I knew that smiles were his passion. I heard several stories about the women whose smiles and lives Dr. Lewis had literally transformed through cosmetic dentistry, restoring the damage from terrible accidents, or for one unfortunate woman who had her teeth knocked out by her abusive husband's steel-toed boot. I knew he would have the compassion to interview Sarah in a way that others couldn't. Dr. Lewis is a board-certified accredited cosmetic dentist with an extremely successful practice here in the Woodlands. I know he did my teeth. So he is recognized worldwide by peers and patients alike and as a pioneer in cosmetic dentistry and has been featured as a speaker at dental conferences across the United States. Dr. Lewis was voted best of the best dentist by Houston Chronicle 2 years in a row and is a Texas Monthly Hall of Fame super dentist.
Wow.
He also has been named top doc by H Texas Magazine for the past 20 years. Dr. Lewis currently serves as the official cosmetic dentist of the Houston Astros and has also served as the official dentist of the Houston Rockets, the Houston Dynamo, and the Miss Texas pageant. For over 35 years, I know he started when he was 10, Dr. Lewis has transformed the smiles of many well-known figures and athletes, as well as many women and men here in this community and around the world. But more importantly, he is a devoted husband, father, and grandfather. Please welcome Dr. Lewis to the stage. Thank you. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much. So I'm honored today to interview Sarah Rule. She's a award-winning playwright, artist, wife, mother, and best-selling author of a book, new book called Smile, The Story of a Face. Brimming with insight, humility, and levity, Smile is a triumph by one of America's leading playwrights. It's an intimate examination of loss and reconciliation, and above all else, the importance of perseverance and hope in the face of adversity. Sarah begins her new memoir by saying, 10 years ago, my smile walked off my face and wandered out in the world. She shares the story of suffering a sudden paralysis of her face after the birth of her twins. Her book is a meditation on chance, illness, expectation, parenthood, appearance, and about two reflexes that we often take for granted, smiling and blinking. In her book, Smile, The Story of a Face, Sarah recounts the story of her life and the lessons that she has learned while battling Bell's palsy, finding resilience and finding new ways to express her life and her love. Sarah, thank you for joining us from New York. It's a pleasure to have you here. So I'm going to ask you to start us off, if you would, by reading us one of your favorite excerpts from your book.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here and to speak with you. So this is a little excerpt from the book. 10 years ago, my smile walked off my face and wandered out in the world. This is the story of my asking it to come back. This is a story of how I learned to make my way when my body stopped obeying my heart. But the story begins with hope, the very particular hope of a birth to come. I was lying down in a dressing room, cold gel on my belly, waiting as a lab technician looked for a heartbeat. I already had a 3-year-old girl and was expecting my second child. I was also expecting to have a play I'd written to be performed on Broadway in 5 months and was slightly nervous about the potential collision of two kinds of abundance. Suddenly, the lab technician pointed to the screen and said, "Do you know what that is?" "No," I said. I flashed on the ultrasound I'd had before miscarrying my second pregnancy, when the OB had said the fetus looked not quite right and probably wouldn't last. "Don't go out and get drunk, though," she'd said in a tone not quite teasing, "just in case it's viable." "Not to worry," I said, wondering what gave her the impression I would go out and get wasted that weekend. So this time I feared the worst as I lay there while the lab technician squinted at a screen I could not see. "Look," she said, pointing, "there was movement, a heart beating." "A heartbeat, that's good," I thought, "but what was wrong? Why was her brow furrowed?" "Did you use fertility treatment?" she asked. "No," I said. "Well," she said, "you have twins." My mind raced to keep up with my body. "You can go to the waiting room," she said. "I'll give you a list of new providers. We can no longer be your OBGYN because your pregnancy is now considered high risk." Afterwards, I went to lunch with my husband to celebrate. At the end of the meal, I got a fortune cookie. I cracked it open. It said, "Deliver what is inside you, and it will save your life."
Wow, that's powerful.
Thank you so much. Just a little taste.
So in your book, you tell the journey of your life the past 10 years since your diagnosis of Bell's palsy. Can you take us back and describe to us that day 10 years ago that changed your life forever?
Sure. I was breastfeeding the twins. I already knew how to breastfeed one child, but a lactation consultant was teaching me something called the football hold, where you hold both twins at the same time and feed them that way. And she looked at me and said, "Your eye looks a little droopy." And I made some joke like, "Well, I'm Irish, you know, like my great uncles get droopy eyes when they drink too much." And she said, "No, that's not what I mean. Go look in the mirror." And I looked in the mirror and this whole side of my face had fallen down and was paralyzed. And my husband's a doctor. And I called him and I knew he thought I'd either had a stroke or Bell's palsy. And we got a neurologist in who did diagnose Bell's palsy. And I think the strangest thing was feeling like the same person before I looked in the mirror and feeling like a completely different person after I looked in the mirror.
Yeah, I've worked as a dentist for a long time and have seen many people who come in and because of this problem or that with their teeth, they're ashamed to smile. And mm-hmm. I'm always amazed at the impact that this has on their lives. Many of them say it affects the way people view them, it affects their own actions, their personalities. So I really connected with this discussion of the emotions of the way you want to express versus the emotions you're able to express. Could you speak to that a little bit?
It was really hard. It was hard to be friendly when meeting new people. I felt like people I knew well could kind of graft what they knew of me onto my face, and they knew when I was being friendly. But I thought people who I didn't know, they didn't know when I was inviting conversation. Even my own mother, when we were sitting next to a play of mine, it was the opening and she was sitting on this side and she kept looking over and saying, "Are you not pleased?" finally. And I said, "No, I just can't move this side of my face." I was especially upset that I couldn't smile at the babies once they were born. It just felt hard to not feel like I was showing my full joy and love at a time when babies were still learning how faces are coded and how emotions are coded.
So yeah, you talk about your babies, and I think all of us who have kids, I'm a father of five, grandfather of four, and we all want to be able to smile at our babies. So how did you compensate for that? What did you do that helped you show joy, show empathy to your babies?
Well, it took me a long time to realize that what I was doing all along was using my voice and using my touch, using my hands, holding them. And I think I was looking for old pictures of me with the babies for this book, actually, and I could find very few because I never wanted to be photographed at that time. But I found videos where I was behind the camera asking them questions, and I realized that all the warmth and all the love was in my voice all along, you know, that it wasn't actually about the face.
That's great. You said one time that we are our face, but we're not our face. that our smile is our joy and our smile is not our joy. And how did you start to rebuild and come to realize that the inability to smile would not keep you away from your joy?
In a funny way, honestly, I think it was writing this book that was a healing process for me. I think there was a point where I hit rock bottom, where I felt like I wasn't going to get better. And I had to make peace with my face as it was. And because for a long time, I think I was just in denial about the whole situation and just kept writing and mothering and living my life. And I found the situation with my face excruciating, but I didn't talk about it to anyone. I just really put a brave face on it, as it were. But I think at a point I realized all of us are encouraged, particularly as women in this culture, to look for our old faces, the faces that we were when we were, you know, 23. And there's always inevitable disappointment that that face doesn't maintain itself. But I came across a passage in Buddhism about the original face, the face you have before you're even born or before your parents are born. And it's this concept of who you are at the most subtle level. And I thought, oh, I've been spending all this time looking for my old face. I should have been looking for my original face.
You know, I also heard a story about something that relates to what you just said, about a story of what your daughter's beautiful words were that were mature well beyond her years. And would you share that with us?
Sure. My daughter was listening to a conversation my editor and I were having. I was on speakerphone driving. And I said, oh, that must have been interesting to hear me talk about the book. What did you think? And she said, well, it was interesting. And she said, I think I've always thought of your face, Mama, as a beautiful house. And one day a wall came crumbling down quite suddenly. And you kept trying to build it up brick by brick, and you couldn't quite. And she said, but when I look at your face, all I see is my home. So I thought, oh, I've been so busy trying to rebuild this wall. But my children always accepted my face. And I think we think a lot about unconditional love that parents have for children. But sometimes it's incredible to realize that children also have unconditional love and acceptance for us.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. So tell us about some things that you've learned about how to help someone who's facing an ongoing struggle in their life. You know, were there things that people in your life did for you or said to you that helped you through this journey?
There was one conversation I had that was really impactful with a friend who had lost a baby granddaughter. And she said, I'm so sick of running into people in the grocery store who say, I can't imagine what you're going through. And when she told me that, I started shifting what I said when people were going through really hard things in their lives. And I started saying, I can only imagine what you're going through. And, you know, I've lost my father to cancer when he was quite young. And we lost my mother-in-law to cancer when she was fairly young. And I think I want more to say to other people who are going through similar hardships, I can only imagine. And that there's a real moral imperative for us to try to imagine what other people are going through.
Yeah, that's great advice. I would imagine now more than ever, what we've been through the last 18 months in the country, that people are able to relate to some of the themes in your books about barriers to connection. And what has the past year been like for you? And do you feel that any of the lessons you learned in your years with Bell's palsy and what you went through with that have prepared you in some small way for the last 18 months?
Well, what I learned was that the impulse to connect in the human spirit is so vast and deep that it really reaches beyond, you know, things like a paralyzed face or a Zoom screen or a mask, you know, that we so want to connect with each other. So we use other ways. We use workarounds. So when I really couldn't smile in the acute phase, I would use my hands to gesture. I would try to make listening noises to show people I was absorbing what they were saying. I'd say, whereas normally I might smile. So I find myself doing that in the grocery store too, with my mask on, talking more to the person bagging the groceries rather than smiling, you know, rather than assuming that they're getting everything from my face.
So I'd like to end on a kind of a big picture question for you. Is you've said that we all grow from our obstacles. And I'm sure on many days, the obstacles you felt or faced seemed insurmountable. But everyone can relate in their own particular way to that, things in their life. So what advice do you have for people who feel like they're facing their own insurmountable obstacles that and can't see the light at the end of their own tunnel?
That's such a good question. I talked to a neurologist friend once and asked her, how do you talk to people who have neurological situations that intimately affect their sense of identity when there's no cure? And she said, one thing I do sometimes is have them write a list of things that they're grateful for, and not your typical Thanksgiving list that's where you kind of say off the cuff, I'm grateful for my friends and family, which of course we are. But she said, write down everything, every single little thing you can think of, that if it disappeared at midnight tonight, you would be very upset. So things like, I'm grateful for running water. I'm grateful for my big toe. I'm grateful that my husband's heart is beating. I'm grateful my children can walk. You know, trying to enumerate all these incredible miracles we take for granted. You know, one day not being able to blink, one realizes what an important thing blinking is, but we don't think to thank the universe for our ability to blink. It's so trying to enumerate all these joyful, wondrous things in the universe that we do have, even when things seem bleak.
That's an awesome message. Gratefulness, that's something that we all should have. We're so blessed. Sarah, you're a respected playwright and author and a loving mother, and you're an inspiration to us. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so glad to have you. And good luck with your book, Smile, the Story of
Faith. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for watching the Global Business Women's Pod, brought to you by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. We cannot wait to see you next Thursday at 6 p.m. And remember, you can always find us at ghwcc.org.